So I have to say that it is delightful to be home. This still feels like home. Living Presence doesn't offer a weekly worship service, and so I'm kind of traveling around doing pulpit supply all over York region. But it is so nice to be back and visiting with you, saints, who have been part of my spiritual formation. So thank you for having me. I wanted to start this reflection with a bit of a story. The Christmas just before I turned 11 years old, I was at a party in the parking lot of the Miracle Food Mart in Orillia. The party, it was festive, but it was really a rally of striking food retail workers. Beginning in November 1993 and ending in February of 1994, the 14-week job action was the longest retail strike in Ontario history. It was angry. It was bitter. Blue-collar strikes are often very, very different than those of unionized professionals. I remember stories of fistfights on the picket lines, black eyes, bloody noses, broken bones. The end result of this strike was an across-the-board $1.75 an hour wage decrease and 700 jobs being eliminated from a 6,500-person workforce. Women overwhelmingly bore the brunt of the wage losses, and the hardest-hit department across all 63 stores was the meat department. My father is a meat cutter, a trade that required a 3-year apprenticeship, with most butchering moving to large factories in the GTA. My father was one of those 700 workers forced to accept a buyout. But let's go back to Christmas. By the time Christmas came around, the Miracle Food Mart employees had been on strike for over 6 weeks. And my father's union gave him and the rest of the workers toys to put under the tree. I have 3 younger brothers, and each of them received a reasonably acceptable gift. My present was a fake plastic makeup kit, the kind that you give to a toddler. Toy lipstick, toy blush. I was going to be 11 in 5 days, and I had approximately 0 interest in makeup or the color pink. It was probably the worst Christmas gift I have ever received in my life, and my father was absolutely mortified. It wasn't until I was older that I was able to put my finger on what it was my father was probably feeling in that moment. Shame. It was shame. Our text from Luke this week, it feels familiar, but maybe a bit more familiar than it actually is. When we think of the Beatitudes, we're mostly thinking of Matthew's version. Blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed are the peacemakers. It's Matthew's version that gets embroidered onto muslin by crafty church ladies. It's Matthew's version that gets parodied by Monty Python. It's been 25 years since the end of the Miracle Food Workers strike. And the end of that strike marked the end of my family's financial stability. From that moment on, everything was precarious. How and what we ate changed. What extracurricular activities we could participate in changed. Our house went on the market so many times. One of the hidden casualties of precarious work, of unstable finances, is one's sense of safety and security that sense that things are ever just going to be okay. And so I also remember sitting in the pews of my tiny little country church and hearing, "Happy and blessed are you poor, for the kingdom of God is yours." And me at this point, a teenager, and deep in my snarky phase, I remember thinking, "Yeah, right. Screw you, Jesus. Screw you." Because Jesus obviously didn't know much about poverty. If he could, in any amount of seriousness, talk about it being a blessing. Quite frankly, it read like a capitalist manifesto, because all those poor folks are way less likely to call the powers that be to task if they believe that there is actually some benefit to being poor. And so I hated the kitschy cross-stitch hangings. This was not a Christ who got me. But this is Luke. I like Luke. You're not going to find Luke on the hangings in the church hallway, probably because Luke adds something that Matthew doesn't. The woes. Oh, those woes. Woe to you who are rich. Woe to you who are fed. Woe to you who laugh, for you have already had your easy life. In some translations of Luke, blessed and woe are actually translated as happy and terrible. But none of these seem very accurate. I mean, I'm happy when my husband remembers how I take my tea. None of these words seem powerful enough to reflect what Jesus is actually talking about here. So it might be more helpful to think of this passage in terms of the honor and shame system so prevalent in Jesus' time. It is the same system that makes an unwed mother giving birth to the Son of God so scandalous. And really, every story we read and hear in Luke, it all circles back to that song. The song that Mary sings when she is visited by an angel. A song about the beautiful absurdity of the tables turning, finally turning, for the benefit of her community. She says, "God has cast down the mighty from their thrones and has lifted up the humble. God has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich God has sent away empty." Shame. Honor. Is it really so different now? Is it really such a different system? We have an unfortunate tendency in the United Church circles to think of those experiencing poverty as those outside our congregations. We talk of the poor as if they are an other deserving of our charity, and perhaps even our advocacy. But we are still advocating for a people we are imagining exist outside our buildings, who are not part of our line of communions of saints, that they're not sitting among us, and this is not true. And because of that language, because of that mostly unconscious thinking, those among us who went through experiences like my family can feel an incredible amount of shame within architecture that is supposed to be sanctuary. Many of you may know that I was part of Rosedale's Out of the Cold Lunch program about 8 years ago, so you want to talk about a group of people who are saints in this community. Just go to an Out of the Cold Lunch this winter. We'd serve up to 300 meals every Tuesday. But there was one man I remember very clearly. He had recently lost his job in the financial services industry, and he would show up for lunch in a suit and sit by himself. I remember sitting down to talk with him, and the first words out of his mouth were, "I'm not poor or anything. I'm just in a bit of a tight spot right now." Because to be poor, that would be shameful. The shame, it was heartbreaking. The shame of feeling like poverty was a personal failure and not the result of overwhelmingly unjust systems which always, always favor the powerful. Who suffered the most when his company went bankrupt. Poverty is never the fault of the poor. Shame and honor, who decides and who bears the consequences? I'm a candidate for ordered ministry through this congregation. You have spawned me. Specifically, I have been called to a diaconal ministry of education, service, social justice, and pastoral care. My experiences growing up, the social ministries work at Rosedale, my current work with the Living Presence Ministry in East Gwillimbury, all have helped to form me and my call to a ministry of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. You have spawned me into a ministry of paying attention. This Sunday, across the country, diaconal ministers and candidates are leading worship services centered in diaconal perspectives of justice work and advocacy, connecting to the long line of saints who have come before us, translating the church to the world and the world to the church. Sometimes this means translating the needs of the vulnerable into the words of the powerful. And Luke got this. While Luke's primary audience was poor, it was not his only audience. Luke had a patron, and this patron's name was Theophilus, who would have been a man with social clout, a man of means. Luke knew that for the powerful to join the Jesus community, they would become outcasts in a way that they had never experienced before. Social ostracism is always the fate of the poor in society. But for early Christ followers, social ostracism also became the fate of the rich who joined Jesus groups that included the poor. Luke knows the terrible costs involved, but is uncompromising in his demand that those costs be paid. And so too are we called to stand up. It is not so much woe to those who are rich, but rather woe to those who are rich at the expense of others. Woe to those who can see nothing beyond their own wealth. And so we are also called, like Jesus, to come down from the mountain onto level ground and truly risk. Church is not easy, and I once heard Doug Norris from about right there say that rather than create an expectation of safety in our churches, we should be handing out chisels and hard hats when people walk through the doors. At its deepest and most authentic, church is not easy. It would have meant something 25 years ago if churches in Ontario collectively took a stand against the corporation and union that sold out people like my father. Could it have changed the system? Meh. Maybe. But mostly, it would have done something to spread balm over the shame of the workers who lost their livelihoods, because that shame was not theirs to bear. Poverty is never the fault of the poor. So how do we do unto others? On this Sunday, we remember that we are connected to a vast communion of saints. And I often wonder about myself. Generations to come, will I be remembered as a blessing or a woe? In a moment, we will sing together, "From the halls of power to the fortress tower, not a stone will be left on stone. Let the king beware, for your justice tears every tyrant from his throne." The hungry poor shall weep no more for the food they can never earn. There are tables spread, every mouth be fed, for the world is about to turn. Jesus knew this, and he knew our part in this. And I pray that we do too.